From WBUR Boston, I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Undocumented workers living in fear of deportation are coming out of the shadows to push back on tough immigration laws. Yesterday, the UndocuBus, filled with Latinos with no papers, launched its campaign, riding from Phoenix across the southern United States to the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte. They're telling their stories. They're advocating for themselves. This hour, On Point, a call for immigration reform. You can join the conversation. Have you or someone you've known been threatened with deportation? What do you think of current U.S. immigration policy? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll have as a guest Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio. But joining me first from Denver, Colorado, is Tanya Unzueta. She's one of the riders on the UndocuBus and has been part of the immigrant reform movement for over a decade now. She's a member of Chicago's Immigrant Youth Justice League and has organized marches and civil disobedience protests across the country. Tanya, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Wade.
Tell us how you came to be on this bus.
Sure. I've been organizing with undocumented people for a long time, particularly with undocumented young people. And one of the things that has happened is that we've realized that it's important for us to talk about our own stories in our own voices. And as we've talked about being undocumented publicly and talked about the kinds of reforms that need to happen in this country, we've also started to realize that the safest community, the best way that we can keep our families together is to organize as undocumented people. And so this bus is that idea that has been used by undocumented young people trying to take it into different parts of the country. And I am so excited to be with a group of people that is really talking about being undocumented for the first time in their lives. A lot of them have been living in the United States for over a dozen years, but haven't been able to fix their immigration status and have lived scared all of their lives. And so I think this is a chance for us to talk about our stories and also share the kind of strategies that we've been working on in different parts of the country.
What's it like on the bus? You know, how many are on there? Tell us a little bit about what it's like on board.
Sure. Well, it's this big turquoise bus that was painted by community members in Phoenix, Arizona. And there's about 30 of us who are going to be riding around the country. I think while we're on the bus, we're planning different trainings that we're sharing with community members. We're doing interviews with the media. We're doing Know Your Rights trainings with our own passengers of the bus. And, you know, we're talking about where we're going and what we're going to do as undocumented people in this country.
Well, there's hundreds of thousands of other undocumented, many teenagers, many of whom were brought by their parents when they were infants or 2 or 3 years old, and they've been taught by their parents and friends and their culture to keep quiet. After all, if you protest, you could bring deportation for you and your family down on your head. Why aren't you afraid?
You know, I was scared for a long time. A lot of people's experiences, I was also told not to talk about my immigration status, not just by my family, but by professors and by people who I trusted. And I feel like I'm really on the right side of history. It's sad that, you know, saying that we believe that families should stay together, that people deserve to have rights, that people should be able to contribute fully to the society is a political statement, but that's what it's become. And so for me, talking about my story is also part of trying to change my community's lives for the better and really this country for the better.
Has the president's executive order exempting DREAM Act qualifiers from deportation made a difference to you and your peers in terms of feeling like you can speak out now and protest more safely?
You know, we've been protesting as undocumented, talking about not being scared before the deferred action policy was announced. And I think in part it's because of the kind of protest that we have been doing. It's definitely going to change some lives. I mean, I have no idea what it feels like to have a job permit, for example. And that's pretty exciting for me, I think. But You know, at the same time, I think that this is the work that we're doing is not about talking about the presidential policies, and it's not talking about, you know, I mean, yes, we need immigration reform. We need more than that. Our parents are still in deportation proceedings. But to me, if losing our fear is inconvenient for either party, that's unfortunate. But the tour is about our community, about being able to organize and realizing that the only secure community is an organized community.
Speaking in the Rose Garden on June 15th, President Obama announced that hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants who came to the United States as children would be allowed to remain in the country and work.
Effective immediately, the Department of Homeland Security is taking steps to lift the shadow of deportation from these young people. Over the next few months, eligible individuals who do not present a risk to national security or public safety will be able to request temporary relief from deportation proceedings and apply for work authorization.
I'd like to bring in another voice here. Diane Solis is the senior writer for the Dallas Morning News reporting on immigration. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Wade.
You've been covering the DREAM Act movement, which I think lost quite a bit of momentum after it failed to pass the Senate 2 years ago. But I think it seems to have changed. What's happened?
Well, a wave of relief, I think, has happened among the youth here in Texas and in other parts of the country because, as Tanya said, they can now get a work permit. There's deferred action on deportations of certain young people from the ages of roughly 15 to 30, provided they have a high school diploma or a GED. This doesn't give them a green card, though. It only provides a work permit. And I've been surprised at how relieved and grateful many young people I've talked to are just to have that.
Well, yeah, when I remember when the announcement was made, I was in Dallas at the time. And on TV stations around the state, we saw teenagers, Hispanic teenagers, with tears pouring down their face.
Yeah, indeed we did. And as I said, it didn't provide them with all they wanted that was in the DREAM Act. But after a decade of trying to get the DREAM Act passed through Congress and a decade of failures, it seemed that they were very happy to get just what they got. And then there was the political aspect of it as well, that Mark Rubio, a Florida Republican, had been proposing something very similar. And he was and it was expected to become part of the campaign platform for the Republican nominee for the White House.
You've covered the movement. Where do you see it going now?
I think it's going to be very hard for any sort of comprehensive overhaul of immigration laws to pass if that comprehensive effort includes something that provides a legalization program, a path to citizenship for the 11 million who are estimated to be here unlawfully. And so I think that young people understand this, and that's why we're seeing this effort around the country by young people to give their names and their narratives to what they see as a cause that's so vital for them and their families. You see it with the so-called Dreamers. You see it with those that are joining the OnDocuBus. I also think that what's happening in North Carolina, playing out just in the last week, is very interesting. There, a group of young people, again, have deliberately got arrested, I believe, and gotten inside a Florida detention center in Broward County. And they're going to have a press conference today to tell what they found. And in the press release that went out last night, it said that they found people who are eligible for legal relief. That's taking quite a risk. You also have something that's playing out under the radar somewhat with all these unaccompanied minors who are coming into the U.S. largely from Central America, and they the numbers have doubled. And some of the people who defend them are saying that it's time to stop looking at that as an immigration issue and look at it as a refugee issue.
Tanya, do you find that it's the young Hispanics who are leading this movement? Are older Hispanics frightened?
You know, the undocumented youth movement is not just Latinos in the United States. In fact, the protest that they were talking about in Florida is being organized by a national organization called the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, which my organization in Chicago also belongs to. And my friend Viridiana is one of the people who's at the detention center. And one of the things that I wanted to add is that precisely what happened after the DREAM Act failed in 2010 is that we started talking about beyond the undocumented youth movement. And so a lot of us have turned to thinking about what's happening with those people who fall outside of the low priority criteria, but also just trying to get people to be out of detention if they really are low priority. And that, I think that's what's happening in Florida right now.
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about our nation's immigration policy, what it means for the people who remain undocumented, for those who rely on those workers, and how it's going to play out in the upcoming election. Joining us now are Tanya Unzueta, a writer on the UndocuBus and a longtime immigration reform organizer, and Diane Solis, writer at the Dallas Morning News. Let's bring it back to where a lot of this began, Arizona, the birthplace of SB 1070, and this is where the UndocuBus tour kicked off yesterday. As Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio defended himself in a Phoenix courtroom last Tuesday, four undocumented immigrants allowed themselves to be arrested in the street outside as a crowd of protesters gathered around them.
Arrest Arpaio! Arrest Arpaio! Arrest Arpaio!
Joining us now is the sheriff himself, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, the toughest sheriff in America. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
Sheriff, the bus riders on the UndocuBus have pointed their fingers at you and your staff as one of the main motivating reasons for their organizing this trip. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I have mixed emotions. I know it's a tough problem, the DREAM Act, and in fact, illegal immigration, the immigration crisis seems back in action again. It's a political year, great timing. It is very controversial, and something has to be done with it, especially in Washington. I don't have much hope. Maybe next administration or next Congress will look into it. I'm a little concerned about the DREAM Act situation where you have young people that don't seem to want to obey the law and even willing to be arrested to prove a point. This is a nation of laws. There's other ways to solve the problem instead of what they are doing. But, you know, you have the First Amendment. You have free speech. I wish them luck. As they travel to North Carolina, I hope that they are civil. It's not going to be worth being arrested down there. And I'm wondering if the bus driver is stopped by police for some traffic infraction and what's going to happen. Is ICE going to be called? Is ICE going to arrest these people? I doubt it. They have a new policy. Not only the DREAM Act, but they're not going to pick anybody up unless it's a very serious crime. These are executive orders, not through Congress, and it's going to be chaos out there for a while, especially when you're dealing with law enforcement, politics, economic problems, and everything else.
Sheriff, if the bus got pulled over, you think they should be, that I should get on that bus. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know the circumstances. I'm just giving an example. If from some other crime has been committed And not just because they look like from another country, not just because the bus has readings on it, but just if another crime's been committed and then law enforcement starts checking the immigration status, normally you will call ICE and ICE will come and pick them up. That's what we do here. I'm not talking about just young people, anybody. Of course, a new policy now is that they won't pick them up. And so you have a form of amnesty, and they get a free ride. So I don't think that's right.
Early in your career, you were described as more of a moderate on immigration issues. What changed?
No, I wasn't. I don't know about moderate. And by the way, I lived in Mexico City. I was head of the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration in South America, Mexico, Texas, Arizona. So I'm one guy. Even though I'm the sheriff for 20 years, I know where the border is. I live there. I understand the Mexican people, and I can go on and on. When you say moderate, what changed? I'll tell you what changed. The fact that we had two new state laws that were passed by the state legislature in 2006. They're felonies, human smuggling, and employer sanction. And I'm enforcing both those state laws. We've arrested on the streets, investigated, and also in our jails over 51,000 illegal aliens. I think we're doing our part. I'm just a sheriff enforcing the laws. That's all. Nothing's changed.
The Justice Department has filed suit accusing you of discriminatory policing. What say you to that allegation?
See you in court. And the main mission of the Justice Department, and by the way, this just happened. Here we go. 4 years. This has been going on, or 3.5 under the Obama administration, all at once. Federal court, new policies. It's an election year. But we'll see him in court. I'm not going to give up this office to the federal government. I'm the elected sheriff. I've served the 4 million people in this county. So we'll see him in court and see what the courts have to say about these allegations.
You believe this is politically motivated?
Well, the timing is very suspect. 100 days in the Obama administration, they launched this Justice Department investigation against me and my office for alleged racial profiling. And now, just now, a few months ago, they're taking action. So, I don't know. Let the people decide whether it's a coincidence or not.
Sheriff, what was your reaction when you first heard the U.S. Supreme Court had overturned 3 of the 4 provisions of SB 1070?
Well, that doesn't surprise me. The most important part of that was retained about where law enforcement is required when you stop someone on some type of violation, that you're required to look into their immigration status. Of course, right after that, 2 hours later, the president came out with his policy that Immigration Customs will not pick up anybody once they get the call. This is a serious crime or just came in from the border or whatever. So it's very convoluted, and we'll see what happens. I'm still enforcing the laws. We arrested 40 more in the last 2 weeks. And by the way, that nobody will talk about, especially my critics, that about 6 of those were minors in different arrests that we've made, 7 years old, 6-year-old, I can go on and on. That's very dangerous, crossing the border with 10, 12 people who they're not parents, or the poor kids don't even know who these guys are. So nobody talks about that. Nobody talks when I raid businesses. They say I break up families, arrest dishwashers, but they don't talk about that they have false identification. So nobody wants to get to the real point here, and especially since I'm the poster boy emanating from Washington, since the president mentioned me several months ago, I'm the guy. So I presume that's why the bus is taken off from my area, because of the controversy and the 1070 laws. I can go on and on. They're launching their drive into North Carolina from Arizona because we are newsworthy. I'm newsworthy, and why not start here to get some press and media attention? Let's see what happens in North Carolina on that side of that side of our country.
Sheriff, we have a lot of callers who would like to get in. Joe is calling from Richmond, Virginia. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Wade.
Hello.
I got a couple quick points. One point is the free pass that are given to the kids of parents that came here illegally, that's a bogus argument. That is no different than my neighbor down the street, him and his wife that got busted for prescription frauds. They got thrown in jail. Their house got seized, but their kids are suffering the consequences of their parents' actions. Now, why should it be any different with the kids of illegals? I feel sorry for them, but, you know, it's like the sheriff said, we're a country of laws. And, you know, it's no different than if I walked into somebody's house, let's say it's your house, Wade, and I decide to take up residence at your house. I'm saying that you shouldn't have anything to say about it. This is no different, other than it's on a much bigger scale.
Great, thanks. Molly is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Molly, hello.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
It's Wade here. Sorry, Tom's a little on vacation, but he'll be back.
All right, how are you, Wade?
I'm doing well, thank you.
In the middle of traveling through Tennessee, going back home to Naples, Florida.
Yes, you had a question or a comment?
Yeah, I had one main point. The way I see it is if there are illegals in the country, they're already breaking one of the national laws. So who's to say that they won't break many more of our laws?
Thank you so much. Fernando is calling from Denver, Colorado. Fernando, hello.
Hey, how you doing, sir? I'm one of the riders on the bus. I just want to make a clear point with Sheriff Joe. If he is really talking about kids and if he really cares about the kids, like he's saying, like he should start by investigating the 432 cases of child abuse that he never investigated. Why? Because he was so busy wasting all his resources targeting specifically some groups of people in the community. So if he really wants to talk about the issue, he should start talking about that.
Sheriff?
Well, it just shows how they always read the newspapers. This is misinformation. We're going to go public and give the real story. So they just pick up on information, rumors, innuendos. So this shows you this guy on the bus, instead of talking about the real problem, he wants to talk about the sheriff and other matters. And that's what this is all about. They want to get rid of me. They have had a lot of threats, and they want me out of office. I'm running again. They want me to resign. I can go on and on. So, you know, let them talk. They don't want to stick to the issue. They just want to degrade this sheriff. But that's freedom of speech. He can say what he wants. So I just use that as an example, what the motive is behind this bus ride. It is to get rid of this sheriff. It's not going to happen.
Vincent is calling from Marshalltown. Hello, Vincent.
Hello, yes. I just wanted to say that I've seen families separated because of ICE raids, and I'm a teacher, and I've seen that disrupt their education at the school among all groups. Every time there's a raid or suspicion of one, there's a disruption at the school, and it depresses education. It's clear business favors the slow naturalization process. Illegal workers are cheap and tractable. But making the visa process faster would go a long way towards solving a host of problems that we have that you're talking about today. Thank you.
Sheriff, we have not had in Texas the kind of tough immigration laws because primarily the business community, and many of them are big Republican supporters and campaign contributors, use illegal immigrants, whether it's building single-family homes or in the hotel business or in the farming industry. What about the fact that business needs illegal immigrants to work in their businesses? And let's talk a little bit about that dynamic.
Well, why are they paying more money? That's another cop-out. We raided some fast food restaurants. I didn't see the price of hamburgers go up. The prices haven't gone up, and now you see more young people going to college working in these fast food places to, you know, get money for their tuition. So I don't go with the theory that nobody else will do the jobs. This is the greatest country in the world, and you're trying to tell me that we have to have illegal aliens to get the job done. We can get it done ourselves. But some businesses, yes, you're right, they want to make more profit by hiring illegals and put more money in their pocket, and that's sad. Let them go out and hire people that live in this country legally and pay them a little more money if they have to. So that's my response. The caller did mention this. Everybody's talking about splitting up families. Isn't that sad that you split families up? What about everybody else? I got almost 10,000 people in my jails. Every time you arrest someone for drugs or any type of crime, we're splitting up families. But no one feels sorry for everyone. It's always the immigration problem that you feel sorry for splitting families up. We should feel sorry for splitting families up for any type of crime and feel sorry for the kids. So, you know, that's kind of bugs me once in a while when I hear this.
Let me bring my guest back into the conversation. Diane Solis is with the Dallas Morning News, and Chanya Unzueta is on the DocuBus. Diane, first I'll go with you. What's your reaction to what you've heard so far?
Well, this is a great conversation that we're having, and I think it is very important to bring up the point about employers who hire workers who aren't here with work permits. That's a valid issue. It's a huge issue.
There's been crops rotting in the field in Alabama and in Georgia, and farmers complaining they can't find documented either immigrants or citizens of America to pick their crops at any price.
Correct. And there's some people in the construction industry who feel that they can't find workers for the low-end jobs in the trades.
Tanya, let me bring you in. Did you anything you'd like to say at this point?
Yeah, well, it's like Sheriff Arpaio and us are living in two different worlds, but the reality is that we're not. I mean, honestly, the reason why we're starting in Phoenix, Arizona is not only because it's one of the places where the most enforcement has happened, but also because it's one of the places where the strongest resistance is taking place. So we're working with local community organizations like Puente Arizona that has been able to work with community members, teaching them their rights so that when they get pulled over by the police or when they get detained, they know what rights they have under U.S. law. This is a sheriff who has referred to his jail as a concentration camp, and he's said to be proud of, to be considered KKK, and is finally answering for it on trial. We are people who say that it's enough to the politics of hate, and we are ready to take our message not just to Arizona, but through all parts of the country. To us, you know, the United States is our home. I've been here for over 18 years. I am a graduate student, and I'm still undocumented, and I strongly believe that other people like me also deserve rights.
Tanya, let me let the sheriff respond to that. Sheriff, she says America's her home.
Well, you know, here we go talking about my tent city. I'll be celebrating 19 years, going on 20 years in 2 days from now. Now all at once they found out we have a tent city. Where were they before? Why now? Why are they making that an issue? Because they want to get this sheriff. They'll throw everything they can. Has nothing to do with illegal immigration in a sense, other than that's the common denominator. So now they're talking about my tent city, which has been very successful. So I can go on and on. You know, let's stick to the problem. Let's have some comprehensive immigration reform, if that will ever happen. Let's hope that next year something does happen. And get this settled. If you need more visas, work permits, that's okay. I'm for all that. Just don't cross that border and come into this country illegally. That's all.
Thank you, Sheriff. Sheriff Joe Arpaio is the sheriff of Maricopa County. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about how the undocumented live, how immigration policy and reform is changing, and how it's not changing. Joining us are Tanya Unzueta, an immigration reform organizer, also an undocumented immigrant. We have Diane Solis, writer at the Dallas Morning News. And now joining us from Alexandria, Virginia, is Whit Ayers, a Republican political consultant. He's the founder and president of North Star Opinion Research. Whit, it's great to have you with us again.
Hi, Wade. Good to be back with you.
Up to this point, I would say that the vast majority of passion on the immigration issue has been with the conservatives. No amnesty has been a battle cry of the Tea Party, and many conservative state legislatures. I don't sense the mood has changed that much inside the GOP. How about you?
Well, there's no question that this whole debate is enormously emotional and enormously passionate on both sides. I do think it's possible for people of goodwill to find some areas of agreement in the middle, and I think that's where we need to start. The idea of a comprehensive immigration bill that solves all the problems at once is simply not going to happen. We've seen with the health care reform bill that these massive bills simply generate more controversy. They don't settle anything. But there are areas of agreement in the middle, and one of those is Marco Rubio's effort to craft a bipartisan bill in the U.S. Senate dealing with the children of undocumented immigrants. Overwhelmingly, Americans believe that allowing the children of undocumented immigrants who've been here for years to obtain a legal residency status if they have an honorable discharge from the U.S. military. I mean, it's overwhelming. 8 out of 10 Americans across the board, Republicans, Independents, Democrats, all believe that. So let's start with those areas of agreement, see if we can get some sort of consensus, and then move out from there.
Mr. Ayers, I want to make it clear that while you're a GOP political consultant, you're not a spokesman for the Romney campaign, and your opinions here are your own.
That's correct.
I think it would be unfair to Governor Romney to lay, you know, the blame for his party's current numbers with Hispanics in polls solely at the governor's feet. But he's going to have to do something to try to turn these poll numbers around. How?
Well, he has said himself that Republicans need to do better among Latino voters, particularly. It's the fastest growing voting bloc in the country. Every month, 50,000 Latinos turn 18 years old and become eligible to vote, and that will be the case for the next 20 years. Republicans will do better among the Latinos, primarily because we did not flunk arithmetic. We can count. And we like to win elections, and we will do better in the future through people like Marco Rubio from Florida, Susana Martinez, Brian Sandoval, both great Republican governors. We have elected some real stars from the Latino community on the Republican side, and we'll continue to do so.
Senator Rubio of Florida is a client of yours, I believe.
Yes, sir.
And a rising GOP star, and he's been publicly frustrated with his party's intransigence on this issue. Given the strong Tea Party opposition to reform and the Tea Party's amazing energy, I mean, look at what they're doing in Texas with the Ted Cruz campaign for Senate. How does Rubio make any headway?
Wade, the Tea Party supports the proposal I just gave you to allow undocumented immigrants who've served in the military to have legal residency status. You know, it's a mistake to assume that Republicans across the board oppose all of these efforts. It's just not the case. We've got to find areas of agreement, and that's what Marco Rubio was trying to do when the whole effort was cut short by President Obama, who issued his short-term executive order trying to gain political advantage in the short term rather than solve the problem in the long term.
And, you know, what did you make of the president's executive order?
I thought it was a blatantly political move that tried to gain advantage by getting the votes of some more Hispanics at the expense of getting behind Marco Rubio's bipartisan act to actually solve the problem. The president never even mentioned Marco Rubio's name when he made his announcement. He never even tried to reach out and craft a bipartisan long-term political solution. He simply did a short-term executive order for political advantage.
Outside of allowing undocumented immigrants who have served in the military a path, is there any other proposals you think Republicans would be open to?
Yes. I think Republicans would be very open to allowing the children of undocumented immigrants who've been here for years to obtain a legal residency status if they graduate from college, for example. And that's exactly what Marco Rubio's DREAM Act would have done. There are a lot of areas where we can reach agreement, and that legal residency status does not mean making people citizens immediately. What his act would have done would have allowed people who had been here for years to earn legal residency status with a work visa if they graduated from college or served honorably in the military. At that point, they could apply for citizenship and wait in line just like any other immigrant. I believe that proposal could have gained a large majority in the U.S. Senate, but it was short-circuited by the president.
Let's talk about people like Tanya Unzueta's father, who has, you know, who is an undocumented immigrant, not really a young person, has not gone to high school here. What about people like him? Should there be a path to some sort of status for people in his classification?
The overwhelming majority of Americans does not believe we are going to deport 11 million people, roughly the population of Ohio. The question is, under what conditions can they get some sort of legal status? Most of the conditions proposed by people who at least want to address this problem involve things like learning English, like having a job, like not having a criminal record. There are a number of other conditions that could be discussed. And keep in mind, it's not just residency. It's not just becoming citizens. That's amnesty. And amnesty is not going to fly. But some sort of earned legal status with a work visa under certain conditions is the kind of thing I think we can build a consensus around.
Diane Solis with the Dallas Morning News. We're in the heart of this debate right now of what you've been writing about. So I thought I'd have you weigh in here.
Yeah, I don't know what earned legal status means. Are you saying that it's sort of a limbo status where you never have a path to citizenship?
No, it is a legal status that allows you to come out of the shadows. It's similar to a work visa or a student visa. And if they then get the work visa, they can apply for citizenship and wait in line just like any other immigrant. A big part of the problem with solving this whole dilemma is the idea that you are going to move people who come here illegally to the head of the line against other people who have played by the rules and are waiting patiently back in their home countries to come to America. So you have got to resolve that whole justice issue if we are ever going to get a resolution to this problem.
Okay, that seems to be a bit more generous than what I've heard described before. And that may get more traction with the Democratic Party.
Well, that is what is in Marco Rubio's proposal that he was working on.
Tanya, let me get your reaction to some of the proposals by Mr. Ayers.
Yeah, it's definitely a political conversation, and everyone recognizes that immigration is an important issue. But, you know, you brought it back to what we are trying to talk about, which is, you know, when you mentioned my father. To me, while people are figuring out where we agree and where we disagree and where Democrats and Republicans meet, undocumented people continue to be deported. We continue to not be able to go to school. We continue to not be able to travel. Contribute to our community. And in, you know, part of what the No Papers, No Fear, Ride for Justice is doing is that having undocumented people filling that leadership vacuum and demonstrating that regardless of what politicians do, our future is in our own hands. To us, the only secure community is an organized one, and I am going to peacefully defend the rights of my family, including my father, my mother, and my sister, because for me, you know, the history of the United States that I've learned in the United States has shown us that oftentimes just political conversations amongst parties aren't the thing that bring about change. For me, change takes courage, and that's what we're demonstrating when we do civil disobediences, following a history of peaceful civil disobedience in the United States. And we hope that this will inspire the president and Senator Rubio to do more, but whether he does or not, we are definitely here to stay, and we're losing our fear day by day.
Brian is calling from Beaufort, South Carolina. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hi, Wade. How you doing? It's Beaufort if you're in South Carolina. It's Beaufort if you're in North Carolina.
Thank you.
My point, this goes back to a comment that Sheriff Arpaio made about the price of hamburgers not going up when he raided a restaurant. I'm in the farming business. My family owns a vegetable and row crop farm.
Okay.
It's now strictly a row crop farm. We applied for an H-2A visa and our picking cost, the H-2A visa program, and our picking cost on squash, for instance, went up 200%. And that was the difference between us making a little bit of money and losing a lot of money. And so we are no longer in the squash business. And that is going to drive up the cost of produce in the grocery store. And that's just simple economics, because we're not the only farm in that situation. And these guys, you know, it's not that illegal immigrants are so much cheaper. It's that in a large respect, they're skilled at these jobs, at these agricultural jobs. People think of agricultural jobs as menial labor. These guys had skills. They produced more crop per hour worked, and it made money for us as opposed to losing money when we went with the federal H-2A visa program.
This is the difference between survival and failure to you.
Well, yeah, like I said, we are no longer in the vegetable business. We will not do that. We're going to grow crops, and, you know, because we went out of business, we're one small farm or medium-sized farm, and, you know, there will be other farms like us do the same thing when they see these H-2A visa costs. Particularly here in South Carolina, we have a, you know, an Arizona-style bill that was passed here, and, you know, it's going to cost people more at the grocery store.
This is where the rubber hits the road on immigration reform.
It does, and we have actually tested a proposal about setting up a temporary worker program where people would come to America legally for a limited time to work in areas like agriculture, after which they would return to their home countries. 7 out of 10 Americans support that. 7 out of 10 Republicans support that. That is another area where we can get some sort of consensus around a proposal.
George is calling from Salem, Massachusetts. George, hello.
Hi, thank you, Wade, for taking my call. So I guess I was concerned. I know that the sheriff has dropped off from the call, but he spent more time talking about himself than the actual issue. And in fact, your other guest was kind of guilty of the same thing when he was saying that President Obama's plan and his statement was entirely and only politically motivated. I think when we do these misdirections about the real debate, I think we just end up losing ground in the conversation and, you know, looking for real change. And if the sheriff is right that people are thinking about, you know, or trying to get his job from him, you know, I would imagine I would interpret that as being in the way of progress. I mean, look, it's 2012. You know, we need to evolve to modern sensibilities. And I think detracting from the real discourse does a disservice to the bigger issue.
Thank you, George. Carlos is calling from Stanford, Connecticut. Carlos, welcome to the show.
Yes. I want to comment, and I want to ask the Republicans how they're going to win votes from the Hispanics if they own the patent of all the anti-immigration laws, starting with Pete Wilson, Arizona, the governor, even Mr. Arpaio is a Republican. So I want to ask them how they're going to win the Hispanic vote if they keep doing the stuff that, like, is very sensitive to the Hispanic people.
This is a subject Mr. Ayers is thinking a lot about.
They're going to win. Republicans are going to win more Hispanic votes exactly the way George W. Bush did. In 2004, when he ran for re-election, he won 44% of the Hispanic vote nationally, according to exit polls. He won a majority of the Hispanic vote in the Sun Belt. So as recently as 2004, a Republican president did extremely well in the Latino community. He reached out. He campaigned in the Latino community. He asked for their support. And that's the way Republicans are going to do better.
Diane, those were the days. I saw a recent poll from Arizona that showed Romney with 18% of Hispanic support, and I almost dropped my teeth that it was so low.
Yeah, George Bush was a different personality than Romney, and spoke a little Spanish and spoke it fairly well. Right after the U.S. Supreme Court came down with their landmark decision on Arizona's SB 1070, Romney put out a brief statement that said states had the right and the duty to secure their borders. I'm not sure how well that will sell among some Latino voters.
Yes, self-deportation is a long way from opposing the border wall. Tanya, thank you for sharing your story with us. Best of luck on the bus tour.
Thank you.
Diane, it was a pleasure.
Likewise, Wade. Thank you for having me.
Whit, it was great to have you on again. Thank you so much for your participation.
Thank you, Wade. Enjoyed it.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.